we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama, solid conservative, just plain right. Man, we are spanning south of Birmingham, north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Mississippi, Tennessee, all thrown in just for good measure. And as always, solid conservative, yes, sir, and just plain right. And I'm laughing at you, Boomer, because you did it. You did it again.
I did it again. I was not paying attention to the bump.
I got
to
hear Sammy Hagar.
And I was like, "Oh, I know what it is." We're
waiting for Sammy Hagar to do his.
Right.
Yeah. All right. I got a caller on line one. Let me grab that real quick before I go into my topic. Sparky from Harvest. How you doing, bud?
Hey, Phil and Boomer. Happy Friday. Hey. I was listening to a little news clip on the CBS News. One of the most biased news resources I think I've ever had to suffer through on the radio. But Liz Cheney was being interviewed, and they teased. And I think to myself, what in the world would cause anybody in the free world to think this January 6th committee was anything but a political vendetta and a kangaroo court and an absurd, biased, hateful spectacle when you hear one of the senior members on the quote-unquote panel, the January 6th committee, spilling just such hateful vitriol against the quote-unquote subject under examination. And I found it funny. I could do a little bit of homework, but a month ago, Hillary Clinton gave an interview where her exact words were just about precisely what Liz Cheney's been saying lately, and that is, we have to stop this man from ever getting into the White House. He should never, ever retake the Oval Office. And I'm thinking, who would watch this quote-unquote committee or anything akin to it and think it was anything but a bloody god-awful political persecution of a political enemy that they fear?
You're totally right. I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, for her to go out as being the vice chair of the committee that now has the option to refer charges to the DOJ. I mean, the DOJ can choose whether to take it up or not, but they're sitting almost in a tribunal fashion. They're sort of like, they're not a grand jury, but they're acting like a grand jury because they're going to send forth the potential for referred charges to the DOJ. And yet you got the vice chair out there saying exactly what you did. This is like going to a court of law and realizing that the guy on the bench just cussed you out in the parking lot and told you what he thought about you personally. It doesn't work that way.
Well, absolutely. And I would think even the most diehard Trump-hating Democrats, and there are thousands and thousands of them out there, would look at a bug-eyed idiot like Adam Schiff, who's had nothing in his entire resume for the past 5-plus years, but hate Trump, try to destroy Trump, and fail miserably like the coyote to the roadrunner, and think this is anything even worth watching. I guess it's why the ratings for this spectacle have been so low.
Yeah, I mean they've had multiple prime time, like they took over primetime TV to air the real stuff. This is where it's going to come out, and it was like womp womp womp, just never nothing. but anyway, Sparky, appreciate you, man. Good insights as always. Happy Friday, bud.
Happy weekend.
Yeah, you too,
Happy
man.
Happy Friday.
In fact, Boomer, you got that new sound effect, the womp womp. I tell you what, in honor of the January 6th commission falling flat every single day, hit it. worthy. All right. Hey, listen, let me jump on over. You want to call in, you're welcome to it. 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. But yeah, number one on the triple dipper, Afghanistan rescues. So first of all, story off of NBC News, dated 3 days ago. Taliban marked the first year back in power, but for many Afghans, there's nothing to celebrate. So here's some stats for you. I don't know how they garner these. I'm sure the UN or somebody's putting these stats together, but it says the future looks bleak for the vast majority of Afghans. It says at least 43% of the population is living on less than one meal a day. And 97% of Afghans are expected to be living below the poverty line by the end of this year. Some families have resorted to selling their organs, and I don't know where they get that. I mean, the opening of this sounds pretty extreme. But they do say they're selling their own children, and I feel certain that's probably happening. It sounds awful, but there are aspects of that culture that still lend towards selling off someone for indentured service. In the year since the ultra-conservative and insular and violent group, the Taliban, returned to power, this desperately poor country has rapidly deteriorated. It says, what little progress was made in the last two decades in terms of democracy, personal freedoms, and women's rights has all been reversed. The Taliban have shown they have not changed much from the group that ruled in the 90s until they were toppled by the U.S.-led forces in the wake of the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001. In one short year, it says, the economy is now on the brink of collapse. Millions are unemployed and close to starvation. Secondary education has been banned for girls. Women are forced to cover their faces in public, and anyone opposed to the rule risks being tortured. And, remember this, the recent killing of al-Qaeda leader Ayman al-Zawahiri in Kabul, Afghanistan, shows that Afghanistan remains a safe place for violent extremists, something the Taliban had previously pledged to never allow to happen again. Well, you know, here's the bottom line. 2,248 U.S. soldiers lost their lives there. 47,244 or 45 Afghan civilians were killed. And we just literally walked out and let it just fall apart. And now the power vacuum in that part of the world, I think it rests on Joe Biden's shoulders. Got a caller, Boomer? Let me grab that real quick. Yeah, line three, Tim from Huntsville. Hey, Tim, Phil Williams, how you doing?
Hey, I sent you my music today. I hope you enjoyed it. And playing the guitar early this morning on the IM. But anyway, I'm the guy that called about my brother-in-law. He's doing better. He's in the Stallworth Center up in Nashville, Vanderbilt. Doing better. But anyway, you know, I called about my taxes, my state taxes, and you told me to get a hold of my senator. I did. They were so nice.
Yeah.
And it wasn't 3 days later, I got a call from Montgomery. I knew it was in Montgomery. And took it, and I got my $700 back in 2 days.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah, it was.
Well,
a lot with $700. Like, take you to lunch or something sometime. For giving me advice on what to do.
Well, I'm glad it worked out. Hey, Tim. And by the way, I did see you picking the guitar. And yeah, that was good stuff, man. Thanks for that.
Yeah, thank you so much, and I enjoy your show, and I'll still be in touch. I work all the time for a big company here, but I work all the time. I'll retire and probably try to hit you up for a job, so I'll talk to you later.
All right, Tim, you have a great weekend, man.
Yes, sir, you too.
I got another caller on line one. Let me just do that. Charles, Morgan County. Charles, how you doing today?
I'm pretty good, Phil. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah.
I wanted to cover a couple of your couple of things on your triple dipper today.
All right.
I'm a regular caller almost three times a week to Scott Beeson's show.
All right.
I just wanted to tell you that and listen to you while you are on there. And what I'm the two things that I want to bring up are the prison situation and the lack of guards is my wish list to take care of. I would have liked to have said something to Lieutenant Governor Ainsworth to ask him about it yesterday in the meantime of us building the prisons. But also, sir, on our television in Huntsville, on one of the stations, they've been running a special last week about the severe lack of guards. And I almost feel like it's an Afghanistan kind of situation in my mind that some of us should be doing something to be able to help them. Just so few of them with thousands of persons to have to watch over, sir. And I'd like to get your input on that.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, that's a whole and Charles, thanks for the call. Appreciate you calling today. So yeah, the reality is yes, our guards we are woefully understaffed in our prison system. I am keenly aware of it. And in fact, when I was still a state senator, I went and toured the St. Clair County Correctional Facility, and I remember thinking this is a recipe for disaster. I mean, you walk in and you find there's one guard overseeing a room with 150. Criminals in it. I mean, all it takes is for, you know, five or six of them to bow up, and you've got a massive situation on your hand. It's extremely thankless. It's dangerous. And it wasn't but a few years ago we had several guards die. Now, that being said, part of the new prison plan, and I probably need to devote a segment to that at some point soon, but part of the new prison plan is to relocate some of these prisons to areas where they have better recruiting, and also they increase the pay. So they're trying to incentivize guards to go to work and make it a career path. But right now, a lot of these prisons were built back in the old days when it was like a jobs plan for the rural areas. But no one wants to go live out there in the backside of Egypt So the recruiting base, they've got to be somewhere closer to medical facilities and to a recruiting base, and that's part of why they're relocating and building some of these new prisons. So, Charles, that's hope I covered some of that for you, but I got to get on back to my topic. But great call, man, and I will definitely have to do that sometime soon. All right, appreciate it, man. All right, there's an off the cuff, but yeah, the prison system is definitely a serious issue in Alabama, and there are some changes going on with this. I need to get an update on that. So I need to get an update for someone who can square me up on where we are on the construction plan. I know we had a big issue with the bond. They weren't able to get the bonds. They had to wind up upfunding some of the construction plan with federal relief dollars. Caused some controversy. So, yeah, I tell you what, I'll get an update on that sometime soon. That's a worthy plan or proposal. All right, back to my topic at hand before I run out of time. Number one of the Triple Dipper, Afghanistan rescues. First of all, do know this, dated yesterday, major bombing in downtown Kabul, Afghanistan. Death toll in the Afghan capital mosque bombing, now at 21, according to the AP. AP Wire says a bombing at a mosque in the Afghan capital of Kabul during the evening prayers killed at least 21 people, including a prominent cleric, and wounded at least 33 others. There was also no immediate claim of responsibility, but it's largely believed that it's ISIS, the Islamic State. I believe in that part of the world, they're for some reason referred to as ISIS-K, but they're anyway, it may be ISIS Kabul, I don't know. But the Islamic State group's local affiliate has been stepping up attacks against the Taliban and civilians since the former insurgents took over the country. Here's something interesting, by the way. I can't help but think of this. If we had bombed a mosque, it would have been a major cultural issue. It would have caused rioting in the streets in some places around the world. You know, they'd have been out shouting for death to America. But you've got one Islamic extremist group bombing a mosque of another Islamic group. And nobody says a word about the cultural aspect of that. So that's, by the way, what I'm doing here is painting a picture for what life in Afghanistan is like right now. One more thing I'll point out to you, CBS News reporting as of August 17th, 2 days ago. Yeah, 2 days ago. Afghanistan under Taliban rule is a place of desperation. Malnourished children die here every day is the quote. All right, so CBS News reports Afghanistan is starving. The country's in the grips of what the United Nations says is the world's worst humanitarian crisis. That's saying something, by the way. An estimated 90% of its households don't have enough food to eat, and the country's young are among those suffering the most. Goes on to say that hunger has plagued Afghanistan for decades, but since the Taliban took over 1 year ago, things have gone from bad to catastrophic. With the extremist group running the country, the Biden administration has frozen billions of dollars in Afghan national bank assets. International donors who had funded almost 80% of the country's economy have pulled their financial support. But Afghan doctors tell CBS News it's the Afghan people who are paying the price, not the Taliban. Well, yes. First of all, I don't agree with the Biden administration on much, but they had to freeze those assets because what you don't want are billions of dollars in assets falling into the hands of the Taliban. This is a notorious band of criminals who now control the government. The last thing we need to do is upfund them. Now, what does that mean? It means the Afghan people are suffering, but they're suffering because of who they've got now in their government positions. All right, Boomer, take us to a break, brother. We're going to do that. I'm going to come right back, and we're going to start broaching the topic of, are there rescue missions still going on? Well, according to the stories I've got in my hands, there are. And then top of the hour, you're going to want to stay tuned because we've got a guy named Ron Lee calling in with Operation North Star, who has been a part of rescue missions for the last year, and that organization is still active. All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We got more. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right, saving the world one soundbite at a time. All right, 6 minutes to the top of the hour right now. Coming up after the top of the hour news break, we've got a guy named Ron Lee, a friend who I have had a chance to get to know some over the past year. He's been on the show, but it's been quite a while. But he's involved with an organization called Operation North Star, which is still to this day working in the arena of helping Afghans and U.S. citizens escape from Afghanistan. Well, story here on Fox News, dated August 16th. Headline, one year after U.S. left Afghanistan, we are still working to rescue the heroes and friends we left behind, is the headline. Written by someone named Jen Wilson, who says basically, you know, what makes a year? And if you talk to a British person, they talk about the turmoil in their economy or inflation. If you talk to an American, they might say the same things. If you talk to an Afghan, though, they'll tell you that one year makes a difference between 2022 and the Dark Ages, because that's where they feel like they are now. It says the American flag is hope and friendship in color, but that the American flag is also not flying now in Afghanistan, and we're having to work to go back and help people. She talks about how she went through hours and days working around the clock to source planes, to crew charters, to get people out of harm's way, to find safe houses, to follow up on promises made by, you know, Marines and soldiers and corpsmen and journalists to those that they had worked with, and trying to stand beside them. And it says those leading this fight were the men, women, journalists, educators, and clergy who fought over the last two decades for a free Afghanistan. And still to this day, she said, every day my phone is inundated with messages on every platform from interpreters and those who served alongside the U.S. and our allies asking for help, for rescue, for evacuation, asking if the U.S. has forgotten about them. Well, in too many cases, it's as if we have forgotten about them. Story here, this one also came from Fox, dated the 17th, 2 days ago. A group called Save Our Allies, you may have heard of them. It's led by a guy named Nick Pomisciano. But Pomisciano runs Save Our Allies. He's calling out the State Department for delays in Afghan special immigrant visa processing and says hands are tied. The State Department is facing criticism as it remains backlogged over Afghan SIV applicants 1 year after the U.S. withdrawal from the Taliban-controlled nation. He says it's very frustrating. He says we're still getting messages every day. And it's absolutely heartbreaking. He said, we left people there. We did not even plan to scale up the number of people from the Department of State that we're going to need to be helping them process their visas. And then his cohort at Save Our Allies, a guy named Chad Robichaud, says, it would take the State Department at the current pace they're moving right now 140 years to complete processing. And he actually has the numbers. He said the amount that they're processing per week with the number of pending applications they have in front of them and the number of staff they've assigned to do this, at the rate they're going, he said they're looking at literally it would take 140 years to get this backlog cleared. That's a 140-year backlog. This particular group, Save Our Allies, by the way, has helped evacuate around 12,000 people from Afghanistan. 12,000. Group in Tampa, smaller scale maybe, but still pretty cool. Now, this story was dated last December on a local Fox affiliate down in Tampa. In that particular case, this group that calls themselves Project Dynamo, they rescued 47 American citizens and lawful permanent residents of the U.S. Project Dynamo is made up of current and former military members. They sent a team to Afghanistan last week, it says, this is back in December, right before Christmas, and claims it's the first group of Americans to put boots on the ground and conduct a rescue operation in Afghanistan since the U.S. government abandoned the country in August. They located a safe house. They took people there. They gave them vaccinations, food, water, shelter. They even had to give them COVID tests. And then they got them to the Kabul International Airport where they had a charter plane and got them out of the country. They took weeks to get it ready, but it took 48 hours on the ground. All right. Here's another one from Fox. October 29th of last year. The rescue of a group of 10 Afghan Christians, among other 30 or more people who smuggled across the border. The guy who did it, a U.S. Army staff sergeant who grew up as an Afghan citizen, got his citizenship and joined the U.S. Army because he loves this country. But he also said, I swore an oath. I'll never forget my oath, but I've got to go back and help. That's big doings. All right, folks, coming up next, Ron Lee, Operation North Star. The rescues continue. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.